Chapter 82.
I don't know if I should have married you, Janine said. I think I made a mistake.
They were sitting together in the enormous God King's carriage, slowly rumbling toward Black Barrow. Despite the dangers of bringing her to a battle, Dorian hadn't been able to leave her behind. Some plot might unfold in Caliris that would take her from him. And if he had another episode, she was the only person he trusted to cover for him.
But you love me, he said. I know you do.
I do, she admitted.
I respect you, and I enjoy your company, and I think you're brilliant and honorable.
You're a great man.
But,
he asked woodenly. It came out in a rush.
But it's not like it was with Logan. I know it's not fair to compare you to a man who's dead. Maybe I just remember all the good things about him now that he's gone, and I know, maybe it isn't fair to expect love to be the same every time. Maybe with Logan I fell in love the way a girl falls in love, and a woman's love grows slowly and protects itself. I don't know what it's supposed to be like, Dorian, but sometimes I feel so empty. Maybe I should have waited.
I'm a fraud.
But what could he do? Tell her the truth? Send her back to Cenaria and her infatuation for some petty princeling she didn't even know? Together they were changing a kingdom, bringing light to a dark land. What could Logan give her compared to that? Why should Logan's love be more deserving than his? Janine's love was growing. Dorian knew it. It would grow more still when she realized she was pregnant with their child. He knew it. He'd seen that in his moments of madness on the battlefield, and hadn't trusted it or anything else he'd seen there. But in the days since then, he'd looked at her again, and he was sure it was true. Not twins, as he'd first foreseen, but a child. A son. Maybe the twins were to be their next children. He'd been waiting for the right time to tell her the news, but no time had seemed right. He spent as much of his days with her as he could. Their lovemaking was less frequent now that he was using his harem, but whatever jealousy she might feel seemed outweighed by the sudden reversal of the concubine's feeling toward her. Dorian had given her the credit for preserving their lives. That generosity cracked their envy and hatred. Instead of defeated rivals, Janine suddenly had sisters, and her isolation melted with the spring snow. This was real. It wasn't perfect, but it was the best they could do. This was what it was to be God King. Besides, if he and Janine simply ran away, one of the Verdmeisters would rule with even more brutality than Dorian's father had. Every relationship, every marriage had its little lies. He was king. A king made choices for other people based on information they didn't have. That was the burden of rule. Dorian had weighed Janine's choices, and he'd chosen.
I'm sorry for laying this at your feet when you've got so many other concerns, but I promised myself when we married that I'd never lie to you, and silence was starting to feel like a lie. I'm sorry. I made my decision. I did marry you. I do love you. It's just hard to be an adult all the time. You've trusted me to be your queen, and I still keep acting like a little girl. I'm sorry for being such a disappointment.
A disappointment? Dorian asked. You've done better than I could have imagined.
I didn't even begin acting like an adult until I was much older than you are. I'm so proud of you, Janine. I love you more than anything. I understand you're confused. This is a confusing place. I understand you have doubts. We've been married for 2 months, and you've realized that you're committed to something for the rest of your life, and that's scary. Yes, it hurts me a little. but our love is big enough to take a few scratches. Thanks for telling me the truth. Come here."
They hugged, and he felt her unreserved relief. He wished she would feel his hesitation, wished she would ask him what was wrong. If she asked, he would tell her about Logan. He would tell her everything. After a few more seconds, she released him. He let her go, and the moment passed.
"I love you, Dorian," she said, looking him in the eye and not seeing him. "I love you too, Janine." "I still don't call her Jenny. Why is that?"
Kylar opened his eyes slowly. His mouth felt like it was stuffed full of cotton. His whole body was a chorus of complaints from sleeping propped against a tree. Working his jaw to clear the cotton feeling, he sat up. He touched his cheek where Durzo had smeared the poison. The new skin was tender, but there would be no scarring. Durzo was right. The bastard was always right. It was dawn in the woods. Kylar was about to curse aloud when he became aware of a presence in the wood. He filled his lungs with a deep, slow breath, willing his senses to come alive. There were no animals in the forest this morning, but whether all the birds had migrated and the squirrels were hibernating, or if the reason was more sinister, Kylar didn't know. He slowly flexed the muscles in his legs and back, judging whether they would cramp if he tried sudden movement. He scanned the forest, turning his head slowly. The sound of his fresh beard grinding against the collar of his tunic was the barest whisper. The length of his beard confirmed that he'd only been unconscious overnight. There was nothing in the forest, no sounds out of place. He thought he could trust his body to respond. Wind sighed through the big oaks, a few remaining leaves whispering secrets against him. But something had woken him. Kylar was sure of it. Instinctively, he reached for the kakari to cloak himself in invisibility. But the kakari was gone. Kylar reached instead into his sleeves, loosening the daggers there. He scanned the trees. A puff of air hit the top of his head. Kylar threw himself to the side as he buried a knife in the tree above his head. He rolled once, threw himself to his feet, and jumped backward a good 10 paces, daggers in his hands. Durzo laughed softly.
"Ha ha, I always did like watching you jump."
He was clinging like a spider to the tree Kylar had slept against.
"You bastard! Where's the kakari? What have you done?"
Durzo kept laughing.
"Give me the kakari,"
Kylar said.
"All in good time."
"Wait, why am I asking? I can..."
Kylar extended his hand to call the kakari to him.
"Don't!"
Durzo barked. Kylar stopped.
"The hunter's nocturnal," Durzo said. "Its sense of smell is better than any tracking dog. Its hearing is acute, and its vision rivals an eagle's, even when it's running full speed. If I timed things right, you'll have until dark before it starts hunting you."
"What?"
Releasing one hand from where it gripped the oak, Durzo unlimbered a black sword from his back. He tossed it to Kylar.
"Whatever you do, don't take the kakari off Kurok. Everything magical that goes into the woods is marked. It's given a scent, so if it's taken out of the wood, the hunter can find it. The kakari can mask that scent, but I couldn't figure out how to erase it with the time I had. So the second you take the kakari off Kurok, the hunter will come. I don't know exactly how fast the hunter is, but if you really need to use Kurok, take the kakari off, use it, and then get the hell away from it. It might be minutes, it might be hours, but the hunter will come. It will risk everything to get this sword."
Durzo had saved Kylar's life again. Kylar had known that his chances of making it into Ezra's wood were dismal, and his odds of stealing Kurok and making it back out were even worse. Durzo had known it too. In his typical way, Durzo wouldn't say anything to tell Kylar what he meant to him. But he'd do anything to show it.
"You old bastard," Kylar said.
But his tone said, "Thank you, Master."
"I can give you magic for the run. If you don't push too hard, you should get there in time and still have energy to fight. I'm going to Cenaria. This way the hunter has to follow us in opposite directions. It should be enough. Don't run flat out like you did when Sister Ariel gave you power. Got it?"
"Got it,"
Kylar said. That was why Durzo was clinging to the tree. It made him harder to track. Plus, Kylar suspected the ground had all sorts of traps. Durzo wasn't done. He spoke quietly.
"Kylar, the fact Kurok was in the wood tells me Neff's using Ioris to break Jorson's and Ezra's spells on Black Barrow. It makes Eileen's talk of a titan plausible. It also means that you're taking the thing he wants most straight to him. If he takes Kurok from you, he could break the world. I don't mean that metaphorically. For 7 centuries, I've done all I could to keep artifacts of such power out of the hands of men and women who will use them unscrupulously. If you fail, he'll undo everything I've spent 7 centuries doing."
"You trust me this much?"
Kylar asked. Durzo grimaced.
"Come here, you're wasting daylight."
Kylar stepped close.
"When Jorson Alkestis commissioned me for this task, Kylar, he bound me with an oath he claimed was as old as the Night Angels themselves. If you so desire, here it is."
Durzo's back straightened, his voice deepened, and Kylar knew Durzo was remembering his friend and king, Jorson Alkestis.
"I am Sakage, a lord of shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Rider. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. The Koranti shall not go unpunished. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. In ignobility, nobility. In shame, honor. In darkness, light. I will do justice and love mercy. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down."
"Who's the king?" Kylar asked.
"Thou's are a bitch, huh?"
Durzo grinned.
"This is what the Sakage is supposed to be, isn't it?"
"The Sakage's always been made of thugs and murderers. But there have been moments, like diamonds studding a pile of shit, when they've been crooks with a purpose.
Thanks for the image."
"You gonna say the words?"
Durzo asked. "You'd make me commit to something I don't fully understand?"
"Kid, we're always committing to things we don't fully understand."
"I thought you'd lost your faith in this and everything else," Kylar said.
"This isn't about my faith. It's about yours."
It was standard Durzo evasion. You don't ask someone you care about to swear their life to horseshit. Durzo was continuing the conversation they'd started months ago about Kylar's destiny. In choosing a life in the shadows, in choosing obscurity, Kylar would avoid one of the greatest temptations of the Black Kakari, the temptation to rule. Its power made him almost a god already, and the danger was always that he could become what he sought to destroy. Durzo hadn't even trusted himself with so much power. Did Kylar think he was that much better a man than his master? A man serving the shadows also saw things that no king could see. A man serving in ignobility saw wrongs that were hidden from those in power. No one bothered to hide anything from Durzo Blint except their fear of him. The oath of a night angel wasn't enough to make a destiny, but it was a start. What am I for? Whatever else he didn't know, Kylar knew he longed for justice. By serving in darkness with eyes that saw through the darkness, by being welcomed into the shadows, he could give justice to those who'd escaped justice. Those overlooked, too unimportant for mercy, would find better than they'd hoped for. Those who should be stopped would be stopped. The faces of the night angels were already Kylar's faces. I will do justice and love mercy. I'll say it, Kylar said. Durzo grimaced, but beckoned him closer and laid a hand on Kylar's forehead. Kylar recited the vow from memory, Durzo smirking at him as if asking, how well did I teach you? But as Kylar finished, Durzo's hand grew strangely warm, his face somber. He said, Storathi Sigvai, Ibanathso Sikamon Tuvarti, Venedosh Chi Tomethigara, Borgothol Mu Tolethara, Veni Soli Fali Deici, Volesara Dei. Durzo withdrew his hand, his deep eyes limpid, and, for perhaps the first time Kylar had ever seen, at peace. What was that? Kylar asked. Whatever else the words had done, Kylar felt power suffusing him, more gently than when Sister Ariel had given him power, but also more solidly. That was my blessing. Durzo smirked, acknowledging he was a bastard for blessing Kylar in a language he didn't understand. With the way he'd trained Kylar's memory, he surely knew Kylar would remember the words until he was able to track down the outlandish language they'd been spoken in. But it wasn't in Durzo to just tell him. Now get the hell out of here, Durzo said. I've got trees to climb.